Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Michael DeCamp, your normal host, and I've got some exciting news to share with the listening audience today. Since our last recording, I have released my second book. It's unrelated to Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. This one is nonfiction. This one is a spiritual enrichment devotional book. It's called Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. And in light of that, we're going to have this edition of the podcast is going to be basically talking about that book, but I am going to hand the reins over to someone else to be the host tonight. And while I'm normally the one asking the questions today or tonight or whenever you're listening to it, I will be, I'll be the victim on the other end of the questions. So hosting tonight will be my wife, Nancy. And welcome, Nancy.
Thank you. You're hostess with the mostest tonight.
All right. There you are. Now, before I hand the reins over to her completely, I do want to do my normal thing and talk about a book. And I just over the holidays, one of the Christmas gifts I got was one of the holes in my Stephen King collection. In fact, it was a rather significant one because it was the one who got his novel writing career off the ground. I had never read Carrie, although I had
saw the movie, right?
Yeah, I'd seen the movie. Okay. Yeah. And I got to say, you know, actually the movie was pretty true to the book.
Was it?
Yeah. Obviously there's more details in the book, but overall, very true to the book.
That doesn't always happen.
No. In fact, most of the time it doesn't happen. But yeah, you can't walk away from this book. You walk away from it feeling some mixed emotions about Carrie because she really is. Stephen King really gets into her head and shares her inner thoughts and her inner feelings and what was driving her in the book. And that's what makes it stand out from the movie. You can't really do that in a movie.
Right, right.
And so I think you feel a little deeper the pain that she was in. So it was a very good book. If you like thrillers and chillers and of course, most people know the outcome of this. In fact, the book kind of lays the outcome out early.
Really?
It just kind of feeds you up to it over a period of time.
So not a book I might probably enjoy.
Knowing your sensibilities, no, probably not. But Carrie, I finished Carrie since the last recording, and I did enjoy it. And it is now in my Stephen King collection on my bookshelf.
Excellent.
So with that, I am going to hand the hosting reins over to Nancy. This will be her first time ever hosting a podcast, I believe. Mm-hmm. So here you go. Let's see how you do.
Well, thanks. Well, we're here tonight, as you mentioned, to talk about your recently published book. This is your second published book, correct?
Well, yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
All right. Well, how does this book, you said it's different. How's it compared to your first book?
Oh, well, the first book, most of the listeners may know, was Abandoned Hope. It was a young adult, or it is, a young adult thriller with fantasy and supernatural elements. So it's kind of a scary, creepy, dark book. I had a lot of fun writing it, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's a lot of fun.
I would agree with that statement.
But it's definitely scary. So
this book is not scary?
No. This book is challenging because this book is, a collection of stories.
Okay. Tell me about that.
It's a collection of true stories.
True stories
from my own life.
So first person.
Yeah, first
you
person.
You can verify the, were there. You can testify.
Yeah, I vouch for myself.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's legit out in the world, but I will tell you that the stories are true to the best of my 50-some-year-old memory.
So you would say you were there in the room where it happened?
I was there in the room or in the parking lot or in the wherever it may have occurred.
Okay.
I was there because sometimes it happened to me and sometimes I happened to it. So basically, the book is called Loving Out Loud.
Right.
Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. And as I said, the book is a collection of stories.
So what can you tell me about that title? Why that title? Why?
Well, that's an interesting question. That the reason that title is because it probably sounds better to publishers.
Okay.
Because my first title was something called Love Mentalism.
Love Mentalism. What's that?
Love Mentalism is it's a term that I coined. I created it. I made
really?
Up words. Yeah.
Do you make up words, Michael DeCamp?
I do. I do. Yes,
he's known for making up words the time.
Oh, Razzle Snatz. Mm-hmm. That's one of my, that actually making in Razzle Snatz is going to make it into the sequel.
Of Abandoned.
The Abandoned Hope sequel.
Oh, yeah. Good. I look forward to that part.
But Love Mentalism. I coined that and it was kind of spurred out of my reaction to a book by Don McLaughlin called Love First, mm-hmm. Which was, well, it's Love First, Ending Hate Before It's Too Late. And I read that book and it really just kind of, it just affected me.
In what way?
It changed my perspective on what is really important as a Christian.
Okay.
And it changed my perspective. You know, I've spent a lot of time over the years. I've pursued Christianity since I was a child. Started with my dad when I was a toddler. He wasn't a church-going guy, but he told me the most important thing I could ever do is love God, and that kind of placed a seed in my heart. And later on, I found a church and I became part of a youth group. And I got older, I became part of a campus group or a young professional kind of evangelistic group. And I spent a lot of years trying to figure out the right things and have the right views. And sometimes it went political, you know, having the right political views.
Is that possible?
Is it possible? That's a good
Some
question.
Some people think it is, right?
Those are shifting sands.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, something always seemed to be missing until I read Don's book and I realized what it was. And that is loving people. That's what it's all about. Loving God and loving one another. Love your neighbor, even love your enemy. And, in our country today, we tend to think of love as an emotion. Mm-hmm. And we can love everything from hamburgers to our significant other. In the biblical times, the term that is used there was not so much an emotion as it was a decision, a choice, how you actually treated someone else.
So love mentalism is a choice.
Love mentalism is a choice. It's a point of view. It's how you approach someone. Versus coming at someone from a judgmental attitude where I look at them and I think this or that about them, or I don't like how they're dressed, or I don't like how they drive, or how they keep their yard, or what their skin color is, or what their orientation is, or whatever it may be. And that causes me to judge them. It's more coming from it from the perspective that, hey, I'm going to love this person first. I'm going to choose to care about their well-being and what's best for them and respect them and give them what God would give them.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, it's the opposite of judgmentalism.
Yes.
And which could be a choice, but maybe sometimes unconscious.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We've got it kind of ingrained in us. It's been trained into us over the years of our lives.
Just have biases that are there.
Yeah.
Because of our life circumstances or how we've grown up or whatever. Whereas love mentalism is an absolute choice.
Yes. You have to choose to take this perspective. You're not going to do it by accident.
Okay.
And you've got to take actions. You've got to be thoughtful, mindful, and intentional in how you approach that. And so that's the point of the book, is to give some practical examples.
Okay. And you talk about it really, you know, Don McLaughlin's book being changed your mindset. And so you came into, change your mindset in terms of your Christian faith.
Uh-huh.
Is this book then these stories that talk about how to love or show love mentalism, is it only relatable to Christians?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it's more about just people being people and how we treat one another. The book is based heavily on scripture. And so I do lean heavily on that, but I don't think it requires someone to be a person of faith to get the point and to understand the concepts, because it's meant to be very practical how you apply that in various relational situations.
So Don's book, which shifted your thinking, prompted you to write this book, or what really drove that process for you?
I think Don's book prompted it, it's in the acknowledgement page. I call it a compulsion. I felt compelled to write it. And that was stirred by Don's book, because Don's book was very instructional, in a very relatable way, but very instructional in helping us to understand that God's intention was for us to start with love. And when I read that, I thought, you know, seems to me, I look at that book, but also there are other books that impacted me. Bob Goff's books, mm-hmm. Love yeah, Does good. And mm-hmm. Everybody Always.
Yep. Yep.
Also were impactful on my thinking with this. And the thing about Bob's books is they tend to be very practical, but maybe, we're talking about a pretty well-off guy as an attorney in Southern California and able to kind of travel the world and fly people places and do some high-end things. And some of his stories are very practical and down-to-earth and relatable, but I thought, what I'd like to do is write a book that is completely practical, completely relatable, and provides some real life stories.
Some pictures, some glimpses into what this may or may not look like.
Exactly. And I thought that you learn both from positive examples, mm-hmm. and frankly, you can learn from negative examples. And so I wanted the book to be balanced.
Okay, so that makes me think of, obviously they're all personal stories here, and some of the situations or some of the stories that you share are not very flattering, perhaps, about you.
That's true.
Why would you want to share or expose yourself in that way? I mean, we always all want to look good. We all want to look acceptable and that we have the right ideas or the right behaviors. And you purposely have added some stories in there that don't put you in the best light in certain circumstances.
Well, for one, I'm just a real person. And we all have done these stupid things and made these stupid mistakes. And I'm not going to pretend to be somebody that I'm not, at least not intentionally. And I want people to learn from the negative as well as the positive. And what I wasn't going to do is share other people's negative. And so if I'm going to use negative, it's going to be my own negative.
Okay.
There's kind of a, I guess it's not really a written rule. I'm not even sure it's an unwritten rule, but you don't confess someone else's sin.
Okay.
And while I do mention a couple of times when people did something to me that wasn't the best, I've tried to do it in a very graceful way in the book. But most of the time, it's my own screw-ups.
Okay. You know,
it's the times when I really blew it.
Or times when people really exemplified
right.
this approach to you.
Right.
Does that concern you or make you nervous at all that you might be opened up to some criticism or some judgmentalism?
Well, yeah. You know, I'm throwing it out there for the world, right? So anybody can buy it. It's on Amazon and anybody can pick it up and read it. And more than likely, I will have people who will have something to say about my,
everybody has something to say these days,
my
right? Bad,
my stuff where I really messed up. And frankly, in those cases, I deserved them. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't that I'm sharing these to get some sort of accolade for it. I deserve, you know, one of the first stories I tell is about time when I was a teenager and I pointed out, a rather prominent feature on a young girl in front of everyone in a very negative way. And I basically humiliated her in front of the group in order to try to get a few laughs.
Michael.
And I tell that story and I cringe.
Even now.
I cringe.
That was
right
a
now.
Teenager.
Yeah, I cringe. You know, I'm 50, late 50s right now. And I cringe at that 40 plus years ago. And I hurt over that. And I wish I could go back and erase it, but it's not erasable. It happened.
We all have those
right.
situations.
And so the only thing I can do with it is to use it as an example to maybe help someone else learn and learn what was behind that and learn from that and learn about how we treat one another in a way that's more loving than that.
Sure. So what's your hope with this book?
Well, my hope with this is that a lot of people will pick it up. A lot of people will study and read it and that we will, you know, along with Bob Goff's books and Don McLaughlin's books and some of the others, that we would just all learn to love each other better. That we would more closely fulfill what the point of, I think, Jesus coming was about, in loving one another and loving, our neighbor, loving our enemy. So that's kind of,
that's your hope.
That's my
hope.
That
it can help influence that change, that
right.
positive impact.
Well, we have such a man, you all you gotta do is turn on the TV. Open up your social media feed and it's just one negative thing after another, one attack after another, people hating on one another. And it's so ugly out there. And
yes. And I think we don't always, you and I were talking about this a little bit, earlier this week, we don't always recognize that those words, I think I was saying that, sometimes if you can feel bruised from the words that are used or the negative attacks or those situations, we don't always acknowledge, right? That
right.
What we say, how we do, how we treat people can affect us.
Right, right. When we say negative things and we treat people negatively, it hurts us and it hurts others. It hurts everyone around us. Mm-hmm. I made a conscious decision a couple of 3 years ago that it may have been the last election cycle that I cared more about my relationships than I did my opinions. Mm-hmm. I cared more about my friends than I did about being right about this or that or the other, whatever it may be. Yeah, I still vote. I still have my views on topics. But I have to start with loving people because that's what God expects. And sometimes that means keeping my mouth shut.
Sometimes you just need to shut up.
Yeah.
Is there a story in this book that touches your heart more than others or has a stronger pull to you? Maybe on the positive side, the impact?
Well, all the stories are pretty strong. I think the story of Emma has maybe second to my dad planting that first seed. She probably has the the longest long-term impact, because that's the story of loving your neighbor. When your neighbor is pretty,
literally
pretty,
your neighbor,
your literal neighbor, when they were pretty unlovable. Emma moved in. I don't want to give the whole chapter away, but
no, they need to read it.
Yeah, they need to read it. But she lived next door to my family in the late 1960s, early 70s. And my family during that period was rough and rowdy and loud. And there were no air conditioners. So our windows were wide open, and her windows all faced our house and 30 feet away. And she was a young Christian mother, and she had a choice to make. She could barricade herself, or she could reach out and love her neighbor. Mm-hmm. And she did. And it's paying dividends, and that it's still paying dividends. And that one probably moves me a lot. The story of Angela and the great soda can debacle. That's very personal for me.
Yes, it is. Time you almost saw my head spin. I have to read the book to understand that.
I almost wrote that into the book, but I thought better of it because my wife takes kickboxing lessons and I might not survive. But that was that's a very personal one. But there's a lot of them. The story of Brian, the superhero, and his sidekick.
Yep.
Believe it or not, that one's a little bit. It's not funny, but it's a little kind of gross. But it's intense. But what touched me about it wasn't so much the story itself, but there's an elderly gentleman in there who basically was in an embarrassing situation, and I gave him the manuscript before I finished it
to get
him
to read it. Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure he was okay with me sharing the story.
Sure.
An old guy, really old guy. Mm-hmm. And he gave back to me a week later, and he just loved it. He loved the story, or he loved the book. If he apologized to me, I'm like, no. Stuff like that happens. You don't need to apologize.
Right.
Please don't apologize to me. But he's like, yeah, if it helps people, then by all means, share it.
That's cool.
And so that meant a lot to me. And then a couple weeks later, he comes by and gives me a binder full of 8 different potential cover designs. So he was so excited about it. Yeah. So every one of the stories is very personal. So it's hard for me to pick one that stands out above the others.
Do you desire to write more books of this nature as compared to the novel?
Well, I like the novel writing.
Do you?
Because it's kind of like going to a movie, and then you make it yourself. You make the movie as you're watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun. But with this kind of book, I feel like I need to feel compelled. You know, the compulsion that I felt to write this one drove me to write it. I didn't take very long to write it. It drove me. And
how long did it take you to write that one? Do you know?
I think I wrote most of the manuscript in less than a year, probably 6 months, but the rest of the time was spent refining it and letting some beta readers read it and give their feedback and then tweaking it a little bit. And then there was the search process for the publisher and
how'd this one get published?
Well, it's kind of a similar story. Back in the fall, I've told the listeners before that I switched publishers for Abandoned Hope. And right around that same time, my agent was floating this book out among different publishers trying to find a home for it.
The Loving Out Loud.
Loving Out Loud book. And I got this new publisher for Abandoned Hope, and she was on board with the Abandoned Hope stuff. And I've got a 3-book deal with her for more Abandoned Hope style books. Mm-hmm. My agent floated it to that publisher, and I got on Christmas Eve, I got an email back from my agent that new publisher wants this book out there too. She felt like people needed to see it.
Well, and that's very cool.
And so I had a contract in hand for that by New Year's signed the deal at the beginning of January. And now, you know, she's fast. This publisher works fast.
That's good.
The book is out. It's available in ebook and paperback. So she didn't mess around. But that's kind of how that process worked out.
So you've written Abandon Hope. You've written this devotional book. You're working on the sequel to Abandon Hope. What's your writing schedule like? How do you do all this? You have a day job too, right?
I have a day job. I have a wife.
Yeah, remember me?
summertime, I have yard work. Most of my writing now is done in short segments. I squeeze in a longer period once in a while, but I've kind of had to carve out some time in order to make time to write because it was so easy for other things to get in the way. And so what I do now basically is I get up in the morning and I have coffee and you and I talk a little bit and I'm all dressed and ready to go. And we watch some local news and about 7 o'clock, you skip out the door and I watch the CBS morning news. And as soon as that first segment's over, I turn off the TV and I open up the laptop and I write. And I get, if you're from my employer, I stop right at 8 o'clock and start working for you. But that may not be exactly true. I fudge it by maybe 10 or 15 minutes sometimes, but basically I write for about 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay. Every day.
No, not every day, but most days, several days. It's worked really pretty well. Really pretty well.
Do you have a writing quirk or superstition or have to sit a certain way or have a certain beverage or?
No, I should probably develop one. That's more interesting if I said yes, but.
Yes, I have to wear my plaid scarf when I.
Right. Yeah, I've got these special socks I haven't washed in 15 years. Unfortunately, I don't have anything interesting to say on that. So no, I don't really have any kind of quirky thing.
When you share, obviously throughout this whole process, you've learned a lot about writing books. You've been inspired and kind of had this compulsion to write this book. Did you learn something in writing this book?
Well, I learned a lot about myself. Mm-hmm. Because you can't write a book like this where you're sharing these stories without going through them tooth and nail again.
Right.
And you know, I relived the story of Jimmy and the Bumblebee, and I relived what happened with my friendship with Todd in right. West Virginia and what happened with my cousin that I don't even know her name, in Ohio and all these situations that, sometimes were very positive and very encouraging to me and sometimes rather, you know, painful for me to think about.
Sure.
I learned a lot about, I think, about who I am as a person and mm-hmm. where I've come from and where I've grown to and how much I have yet to grow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have all the answers on this. I don't know what's around the next corner. I just know I got to be a better person and I've got to choose to be that person. I've got to choose to love people.
So would you say that this book was fun or more challenging to write?
Oh, no, it was fun. It was fun. It was challenging at the same time. The process of going through it and writing it and trying to put it down on paper in a way that would be engaging for people. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
So how do you feel about being a published author of multiple books? Two now and more on the way.
Somebody introduced me the other day as the famous author. He's a world famous author. I'm not world famous. I'm an author.
Yeah.
And all an author is another person who just happens to write things that some people read. We're an author isn't anything unique or special. Any more than someone who plays guitar or someone who plays piano or someone who writes songs. There's a gift there. There's a blessing from God, I think, for the talent to be able to do it. But that's more the, the accolades belong more to God than to the person. So
what do you think is the best use of this book?
Well, it can be used as an individual. I think an individual could read it and attempt some of the challenges and think through the questions. But I really think that an ideal use of this book is in small groups or Bible studies or maybe even reading groups or...
Why do you think groups would get the best use out of it?
Because everybody's got their own stories. And the way this is kind of created with the discussion questions at the end, people can share, they can talk about the stories in the book, but they can share from their own life and learn from one another about other ways that these concepts apply. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So I think as social beings, it really helps us to be able to learn from those around us who sure. have their own life experiences. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, someone might read this book and my examples in a given chapter might not hit them. It might kind of bounce off a little bit. But then they hear somebody else share another story from their perspective, and all of a sudden that brings it
connects.
To life.
Yeah, it yeah. connects for them.
Right. So I feel like, I think in a group setting is ideal. Mm-hmm. So small groups, Bible classes, youth groups, college groups, you know, reading groups book reading clubs.
Book clubs.
I think that's ideal. But I think individuals can get a lot out of it as well.
What do you think or what have you heard from friends and family about your writing?
What have I heard from friends and family about my writing?
What do they think about your writing?
Some of them act like it's no, you know, it's like, you do what? When do you do that? You published? Really? They look at me with a little bit of skepticism.
Skepticism, but, surprise.
Then there's some that surprise, but there's a lot of them who are really kind of proud of me, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. But, positive reinforcement. We were sitting and talking with one of the family members just the other day, and she was telling us how both of us how much she admired us. And I write these books, but I don't do it in a vacuum. So a lot of this is my relationship with you and my
within
daughters
reason.
Within reason. Well, you are in the book.
I am in the book with permission.
With permission.
I tend to be much more close.
Yeah.
Close to hand.
So. I had to ask permission. I used to write a blog and I was sworn to never use her in the blog, but, she gave me permission to use the stories that she's in.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's a hard question. I mean, what are friends and family think of me? I don't know. You know, I really don't. I mean, my niece Krista seems to be very proud of me.
Yeah.
And I think you're proud of me. I'm just Mike to most people, and that's fine. That's just fine.
Do you want everybody to like all your books?
I don't expect everybody to like all my books. So I'm glad, because if that were the case, I'd already failed because you didn't really like Abandoned Hope.
Yeah, full transparency. I think it's written very well. For those of you who like that genre or type of story, please give it a try. But the story, type of story it was, is not my thing.
It's not up your alley.
It's not up my alley. It's not my cup of tea. But some people love that kind of thing.
Well,
how
did you feel about this book, the Loving Out Loud book?
I love Loving Out Loud. I love the way that you've taken the perspective of, like you said, you share stories in the book about how people demonstrated love to you when necessarily you weren't worthy of it. It's different scenarios and what you learned or gleaned from or appreciated from that. And then when you turn around and you share stories of, this is how I blew it and did not show love or, you know, to someone, I felt like it gives a very practical look at, like you mentioned, give me a snapshot. Let me just look and see what love should really look like today. Mm-hmm. Ordinary, person who lives next door. And I, yeah, I definitely highly endorse this book. Not because I'm his wife, because I would tell you if I don't like it.
Right. Like she just like did about Abandoned Hope.
I didn't like Abandoned Hope.
But you do like this one.
But I do like this book.
Did you have a favorite story in the book? She didn't know that question was coming, yeah, so it's going to take a second for her to think about that. I flipped the script on you if you hadn't noticed.
Yeah, I noticed that. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say the story that includes your interaction with Angela really was...
The great soda can debacle.
Yes. Yeah.
I learned a little bit about myself in writing that one.
Yeah?
I did. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you think that there are certain concepts that are critical, like respect. You know, I'm a father and I deserve to be respected. That's true, but there are more important concepts. Like, is that really a big deal? You know, let's try loving our way through this.
Interesting. So there can be some lessons or some stories that have a weightier importance than others.
Yeah. It's not that respect isn't important. But loving is more important.
Okay.
You know, there are things that are more important. And I thought through that whole debacle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like I came out of it years later. I came out of it with a different perspective than I even did at the time.
Yeah.
So it was good.
Okay. Well, I know you usually at the end of your podcast come up with, there's a little box with little questions that everybody has to answer something.
Right.
So I've come up with my own little box out of the box question for you today.
All right. We got an out of the box question for me.
For you.
For me. Okay.
Yes.
But it's not out of the box.
It's not out of the box.
It's your own.
It's on my iPad because I typed it up so I would remember what it said. It's
iPad box.
iPad box. If you could have a coffee chat or do a podcast with any author, living or dead, who would it be?
Oh, wow. Any author, living or dead.
Yes. I didn't want to exclude anybody. I wanted to be inclusive of that.
Well.
Thought.
How about I try to answer both living and dead?
Okay.
Although I don't know if I can do that. Maybe Ernest Hemingway might be a good dead one to talk to. After visiting his
house in Key West.
His house in Key West and seeing the descendants of all of his cats and seeing his writing studio and
very interesting
person. The little coins that are in the concrete by the pool. if y'all don't know that story, you'll have to just go visit.
Just go to Key West and see the place. It's very interesting.
I think it would be interesting to talk to him, but there's a lot of other authors that would be just as interesting to kick. Well, I should try
spit
actual
it
words.
Out.
kick things around with. Uh-huh. Living authors. Wow. There's so many to choose from. Wow. And I've gotten to speak to some local authors, so it's fun.
Well, I'm thinking more of bestsellers, the ones that
famous.
Yeah.
Well, you can't leave out, you know, Stephen King. I mean, I would love to pick his brain. Dean Koontz, probably. I'd really like to. Yeah, I think Dean Koontz. I'd love to speak to interview or talk to or have a conversation or even just grab coffee with Dean Koontz. Because it was his book, Twilight Eyes, that kind of got me to reading. Mm-hmm. I'd read books before that one, but that was the one who got me reading consistently. And it's his style of writing really appealed to me. And I find that when I write Abandoned Hope in the sequel, I write a little bit in his style. Not intentionally. It's just and what I mean by that is in segments. He doesn't write really long chapters. He writes more scenes and segments. And I get a big kick out of that. And I love his stories. They're just my guilty pleasure, my escapism. Places beyond that is maybe, you know, that, now I'm going to have trouble thinking of his name. The guy who wrote all the, Walt Longmire series. It lives out near Jackson Hole. I'm drawing a blank on his name off top of my head, which that's regrettable, but I think I'd love to, you know, grab dinner or coffee or talk to him. Yeah, absolutely. So that's my answer. I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
All right. Anything else for me?
That's all I got. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to host and turn the table on you a little bit tonight to talk about your new book. And I encourage all of you to take the chance to read it. And let me know if you don't like it. Let me know. Just tell me.
Yeah. Well, and send me an email and let me know what you think of Nancy's podcast hosting capabilities. Maybe we'll let her turn the tables again in the future. With that, I want to let you know that the book, again, Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World, is available now at Amazon. You can get it in both an ebook for $4.99, or you can get it in a paper cover for $7.74.
What a deal.
I'm not sure where they come up with these numbers, but $7.74 will get you this book. There's a lot packed into that book for $7.74. So I would encourage you to pick it up. I would encourage you to consider it for your small group or your Bible study class. Really give it some sincere consideration. I think you can get a lot out of it. And with that, I will say thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time on the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address: authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.